We will go ahead and get started. This is the, what is today? Today is the November 10th, 2020 Finance and Audit Committee meeting. There's the agenda. Professional services selection. How would you like to proceed, Ted?
Graham, I think I'll kick it off for 2 seconds and then we'll hand it over to Mike. Professional services selection is something that historically, we didn't really have an articulated process for retaining professionals if the fee was going to be less than $100,000 in years past. And then in 2009, actually based on some interest from the board, we developed a process, I guess I would call it, that we would follow for retaining professional services. And we've followed that process ever since then. But today, staff would like to propose some updates to that process to help streamline it and help us be more efficient at retaining professional services. And Mike's going to walk us through that here momentarily, but this is not a board policy question. It's not something that the board has historically taken action on or will need to take action on, but we just want to make the board aware and for public awareness, share what we're proposing as a process going forward and then open that up for discussion with the board. So with that as an intro, Mike, you want to walk us through the process?
Yeah, thanks for the lead in there. Michelle's got the document up here. And can you just reduce that a touch there, Michelle? Maybe we can get the first table to show. Again, as Ted mentioned, in 2009, there was a desire to define a process to guide staff in regard to selecting professional services. And this table was developed in 2009. And it's a graduated tables you can see for fees less than five, 25 to 100, and then 100 or more. The 100 or more is not in debate here. There's board policy that would require us to take more formal approach and get approval from the board for services in excess of the CEO's spending limit. What we would like to talk to the board today about is altering this process for the sub $100,000. And so I'm going to have Michelle roll to the next table here. This is the existing, and then this is the proposed. And so for things less than 25, there would be, we're asking that there not be a need or a necessity to always do some sort of notification. We would still likely, you know, garner a couple quotes or make a couple phone calls and get some pricing and then, you know, make a decision and move forward. On the 25 to 100 band here, we've made particular effort here to eliminate the word RFP. The RFP easily turns into a more formal process. And so we would like this band of 25 to 100 to allow us to send some smaller scale items to interested consultants or professional service providers. We would commit to posting that on the website in the event there's someone out there that we're unaware of that might have interest in these things. So that those are the big changes right there. You know, we want to take that first band of 0 to 5 and run it up to 25. And then between 25 and 100, we want to try and get away from the more formal RFP and kind of extract it there. The benefit here we feel is beneficial to both parties. We think there's some administrative things on our end that can be streamlined with this. Likewise, with a consultant or potential service provider, maybe some lower effort on their side to provide us a reasonable quote for some professional services. So, again, this was really born out of some engineering interest, 11 years ago. But the intent here is that all departments here at the Waterworks would use this as kind of a set of rails to acquire some help. So I'm looking for reaction or any history or sentiment here.
Give me some idea of how many of these contracts there are again.
Oh, at least in engineering, I wouldn't be surprised if we handle a couple dozen or more in a year, Graham. One recently that helped motivate this is, need to hire a surveyor to do a drone flyover of a sludge lagoon, 5,600 or $6,500 piece of work. And it feels like it seems like it's a lot of administrative effort on our part to get something like that posted to the website and try and garner, more interest, I guess.
Sue, does that answer your question?
A part of it, yes, thank you. But the example that you gave is in that less than 25,000. In the 25 to 100,000 category, how many contracts on an annual basis do you think we would issue?
At least in engineering, I think we could approach a dozen within a year. That's probably on the high end.
Mike, do you want to comment on the the effort on the consultant or architects, engineers, and to put together a proposal? Is that part of the concern here from your view, or is it more on our end?
Yeah, let me just roll up to the existing table. Michelle, if we can roll up there. And some of this is on us too. We need to own this, but that 25 to 100 band on the existing process, when we tried to create a modified RFP, it was almost like we opted to just make it more formal. And so, the consultants are responding to they're probably putting, a couple thousand dollars or maybe $4,000 into a response for a piece of work that might be worth $35,000, $45,000. And so we're not sure that's the right way to engage them. So to me, that's an example where this process or the recommended adjustments would potentially benefit them as well.
So Mike, I was thinking about the costs on our ends of producing the RFP and kind of having a more formal process. I'm looking at that 25 to 100,000. So I'm curious about that, kind of how much time and effort that takes. And then I guess I was interested to hear the other side of it, that the contractors were engaging, the amount they're spending. And so I assume we assume that we're eating some of that cost when they're spending $3,000 to $4,000 responding to an RFP.
I would assume that there's probably some absorption of that, but not everybody that submits is awarded the work. So I'm not sure exactly how they might detail that. On our end, an RFP starts to look like a small plan and spec set. And if we could cut into that, I'm just going to guess, Joel, estimate. I wouldn't think it'd be out of line that we've got, 30 to 40 hours sometimes trying to put this thing together. And if we can cut that down, by a 75%. I think we've done ourselves some a decent benefit here.
Graham, if I could ask a follow-up question to what Joel just said. Just by the nature of the term professional services contract, many of those are on an as-needed basis. I'm thinking of like ITS. If you have a new software and you may bring in a consulting service or a service to help with implementation of a new system. It says, and Mike, I understand what you're trying to do, and I'm trying to think beyond the ethical people that we have responsible in the utility today. Estimated professional services fee. It doesn't say if that's a one-time fee. It doesn't say if that's over the course of a year. You could have a professional services contract that was $99,000 every single month, and it would fall under that. That would end up being over $1 million contract. So how do we, as a board, see that? And when it says estimated professional services fee, is your intention that it would be for a year or as a one-off? You see where I'm going, Mike?
Yeah, we may need to bring some clarity to that, at least from the, you know, engineering perspective. And again, we're kind of the motivators here for trying to adjust this. This would be a per project. You know, if we need a electrical engineer to help us with the replacement of a UPS in a control room, and we think we're going to have, you know, maybe $30,000 in consulting services, that's what we're talking about. It'd be a one, you know, kind of a one for one. There wouldn't, I don't envision, at least for engineering, you know, recurring, repetitive. And if I'm speaking out of turn, I'll need to ask my colleagues to chime in here. But at least in engineering, this is a per project process.
Sue, I have a thought on that, if I can jump in on your question. You know, because I was thinking about the same thing, and right, I agree with you. Like right now, I feel very comfortable that, you know, Mike and the team and everybody else is going to do a good thing. But what if, right? And so I wonder if we should build in a reporting function that in our regular reports that we get from the board, contracts, professional services contracts are included in that. And you could have a line for new ones that were let that month. Then you could also have some sort of tabulation column for, you know, by each of those vendors so that we have an idea of how many contracts they've had in the last year or 3 years or 5 years, whatever you wanted. Just so there was a tracking and a public record of those things. I mean, that would give us the opportunity that all of a sudden we saw Mike McKernan's brother coming up, you know, in a line item, we would be able, there would be some tracking of that and some accountability to that. I don't know if you have a brother, Mike, but.
I might.
but you see what I'm saying, Sue? I wonder if, I think we should task Mike to go back and think about how do you clarify what a contract is? But I think another piece of that would be the reporting out. But correct me if you think I'm off base.
Michelle, can you scroll down to the proposed? Graham, is your question / suggestion here that we would essentially just document our activity within these three bands for a while and let you guys see it and have it in front of you?
I think it would be helpful. And Ted, think about that too. But, you know, I was just thinking on some sort of reporting that, you know, a little bit like, you know, you do with CEO expenditures, right? I mean, there's a box there that says these are what the CEO approved expenditures are. So copy that in a way to say these are the professional services contracts that were let. And if it's not too cumbersome, you know, add a spreadsheet column in there or a couple of columns that shows, you know, how many contracts the particular firm has gotten in a designated period of time and maybe a total dollar amount over a period of time, just so that we can keep track of those. Maybe that's not helpful. Maybe I'm making this more complicated than it needs to be.
I think that might be helpful, Graham. I could envision us doing like a running period of time, 6 months, 12 months, I mean, we don't do hundreds of these. So if we had a list that showed the professional services contracts that we've entered into in the last picket year, let's just say for the purpose of discussion, anyone, the public, the board, the CEO could look down that list pretty quickly and make sure that it's, you know, we're moving it around. We're if Mike's brother gets something, it's, you know, on a par with everyone else who's getting the opportunity to do our work. And I think that's the point, is that we want to make sure that we're spreading this around and we don't have a single firm who does all our work and nobody else has a shot at it. Frankly, I think we've done a pretty good job recently of spreading things around. We've worked with a lot of different consultants lately, but I think that's the end goal, is to make sure we're doing this in a very equitable way across the market. And would there be a level of comfort if we listed them?
I want to go back to what Mike said when I think he was trying to summarize. Mike, I don't think we're asking for you to not begin this right away. I mean, you don't have to track this for any period of time, but what I hear Graham saying is just, if we're wondering, okay, so what professional services contracts do we have out there, that somewhere on that financial sheet, and I think we would see it every single month, all expenditures. We're just asking if there would be a category, if you could categorize professional services contracts. Yeah. Because here's another thing on professional services contracts. At some point, if you are spending that much outside, you may want to consider bringing it in-house and having another FTE. And how would we know that? And it would help Ted and others justify that, because this is beyond just engineering. This is professional services. That would impact the entire utility. Mm-hmm.
And this is Diane. I apologize for being late. Something screwy is going on with our computer, so I finally got in. But I agree, Ted, the point is to spread it around. But I think the other point is that we have to have checks and balances, and we need some kind of reporting so that we can understand what's happening with that. So I don't think it would be for a period of time. I mean, I think that if we're going to do this and not require board approval, that it would be an informational piece in our board packet as to what was being done. I mean, I would feel better about that in carrying out my oversight responsibility.
Mike, reaction to that, is that?
I just want to make sure I'm tracking. I think what I'm hearing is that, and I just need to state it, and you just need to tell me if I miss here, but for each of these three bands that we are proposing, you're asking for just a monthly list of what's in each category. Is that correct?
I don't think we need it for the third one, because all of those would come before the board.
Correct. And
I don't know that it helps to categorize it really either. I mean, we follow the process here and we just list them chronologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who they are really, and the amount.
Yeah. We wouldn't need to know which ones were less than 25. We'd see it by the total.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly willing to give that a shot. At least in engineering, I think we can clearly chart our own. We may get some help. There may be some more elegant ways to report out on it. There might be an easier way. But even if we just needed to denote the ones that we're doing, I know that we could pull that off, I feel.
I'll bet the finance staff will have a, you know, they code all this stuff all the time to pull it out. And probably when they put it in their system, they can flag it in a certain way, but not being familiar with their system, I'm making that up.
And yeah, Mike, I will jump in here, and certainly we can make modifications, but right now we actually don't have a classification of strictly professional services. We have purchase services, and that encompasses way more than professional services. So, you know, we will have to modify our system if you're expecting it to come out of the financial system.
Is that a difficult task, Peggy? I don't have any idea.
I don't know the last time that we added another type of that level. So frankly, I'm not sure I can answer that today.
That may not
We've
be the,
had yeah, the yeah. same classification of in our system for a very long time. We haven't added a new one probably. I have no idea the last time we added. So I don't know the answer, Graham.
Well, why don't we talk about what the best process is there? I don't know if adding it to the financial system is the best or not, but we can certainly have that conversation. I know that there's no category for CEO expenditures over 20,000, but we figure it out. You know, we can come up with something.
Right. And so we don't want to cause more expense than it's worth to get the kind of reporting. I mean, I think we just want a list, and I don't know how many of these you do.
Yeah, I think Mike said it would be a couple dozen.
Okay.
Yeah, and previously, that $5,000 limit was always a struggle. So, the sub 25,000, there's probably, I don't know. I think we just need to run with it, see how it goes here. If we can kind of get these bands defined, and then we can work out the details of creating some, documentation there. I think let's try it.
Seems to me, Mike, that the hassle you're going to save by creating these new levels will free up just a little bit of time so you can do a little bit of reporting and you'll still come out ahead of the game.
Are you in sales, Graham?
I think it's a swell idea, and I'll let anybody else who wants to comment on it comment, but I have one thought, Ted. I can't remember if a company wants to be a Des Moines Water Works vendor. Isn't there a place on the website where they can go and find out how to do that?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, and maybe Peggy does, but I do know that a company can reach out to us and ask to be placed on our list in some way.
Okay.
I don't know if there's functionality on the website or not, but consultants can certainly let us know if they're interested in quoting on our proposals, and we'll be happy to put them on the list.
Okay. I don't think it has to be on the website. I just thought I remembered seeing something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't believe we actually have that selection on the website, Graham. I will say that when we do have an active RFP, that we're issuing, we put that on the website, but I don't think we have really the, contact us if you want added to the list. Frankly, they're finding us without that, I assure you.
I'm sure.
We are all besieged with requests. I get 10 phone calls a week, and I'm not the purchasing manager.
I just, as I say, I want to be able to choose more than just Mike's brother.
Totally. I don't answer calls from anyone with the last name of McKernan other than Michael.
And sometimes not even that. Does anybody else have anything on this item?
Well, I was just going to say that it might make sense if you're taking all those calls to have something on the website and just direct people. You can get on our list and you'll receive notice.
Perhaps there's a lot of salespeople that are a little more persistent than that.
Anybody
else?
I think, Graham, your idea for having a little sunshine on this so we can review it periodically is a very good one. And I think this makes a lot of sense, assuming that we think we can still reach enough vendors through this process to get good bids and enough bids that we're finding the best ones. And it sounds like staff is confident in that. So
thanks for that. I agree, Joel. I mean, I think that, as we get through the first, few months of this, we should look and make sure that we're comfortable that we're being transparent, that the information is out there, you know, for us to look at, but also for the public to look at. And what I hear is we're not, none of us are too sure what that should look like yet. We just know it should look like something. So let's keep our eyes on that.
Hey, Graham, take a look at Pat's note in the chat. Thank you, Pat.
So unsolicited contacts. I don't know what that means.
It's actually called unsolicited proposals under the bids and RFPs section.
See, that's, I guess, what I was pulling out of my memory, but interesting.
You have a better memory than I do, Graham.
Yeah, well, sometimes, Peggy, just sometimes. Anything else? All right. Where should we go next, Ted? Here I close.
The next item on the agenda, Graham, is our departmental budget overview presentation. And as you know, we've talked about the budget a couple of times already, including a presentation from Michelle Holland at last month's F&A, a pretty detailed budget presentation. And then at the board meeting, we set our public hearing for the next board meeting where we will actually approve the budget. But what we want to do now is just take a couple of minutes to run through department by department and share with the board what has changed from last year. So just sort of the year over year highlights. I think that's a great way for the board to kind of understand what's different and what's coming down the pike. And so if you'll allow us a couple of minutes to go through this, I'm actually going to kick this off this year, and I'm going to talk about the CEO department and the COO group as we continue with our transition. And Kyle will talk about water production. Happy to report that we've had some good candidates for water production director and have done some phone screening, and that process is moving along. But for today, we will assume our former roles. The operational budget for these two groups is up about 11%, which is just over $300,000, and a couple of specific reasons for that. One is the pilot. Our pilot this year is going to increase by about $124,000. We've budgeted $1.36 million for the pilot this year. That will vary a little bit because it's calculated based on insured value and the millage rate, and so it will be a little different than that, but that's one of the biggest increases in this group of projects is the pilot. Put a couple of numbers in there. You can see our first pilot we paid in 1998, $234,000, and it's increased pretty steadily in the years since then. Within risk and incident management, a couple of things. Last year, we raised our liability claims. That's the damages that we do primarily due to main breaks that get into people's homes or whatever. And we increased that quite a little bit from 60,000 to 100,000. The good news is that we're not planning to increase that for this year. So that's why that note is there. Security services are going to increase a little bit based on our contractual increase language. We're entering into the third year of a 3-year agreement with Global, and then that's adding about 35,000. And then within grounds maintenance, we have included once again contract maintenance on the Fluor Drive medians, increasing that about $8,000 based on our experience this year. And then we also have our O&M operation and maintenance agreement with the Park Foundation, which will continue at about the same level, effectively one FTE of time is what we're billing the Park Foundation on a monthly basis. And then lastly, the other big thing in this group of projects is strategic planning. We've budgeted $100,000 plus a bucket of labor there to help us get through the strategic planning process. And I will say that Jen has really hit the ground running there, and we've already talked to two or three different facilitators. We're going to talk to a total of six and hope to have someone selected by the end of the year so we can start that process right at the beginning of the year. So
that's— Hey, Ted, what was the basis for putting 100,000 in there for strategic planning?
You know, Diane, it was The basis was a couple of phone calls and descriptions of what I had in mind to a couple of people, and they gave me a ballpark, and that was the entire basis.
Okay.
So that's it for those areas. I think Kyle is next on the agenda with water production.
The good news from our budget for the operational side, we are going up less than 1%. Which makes that number seem even better, is we also increased our estimated pumpage for the year. Historically, for the last several years, we've had in our budget 17 billion gallons. We went up 100 million gallons this year. Looking at the 10-year average, we've averaged 17.1 billion gallons for the last 10-year average. The 5-year average is 17.2. Some might ask, why have we not increased it sooner? If we look back in 2014 and 2015, we only had about 16 billion gallons those 2 years. And so when you underestimate or overestimate your budget and then shoot by a billion gallons less, obviously that's challenging on the financial side. So we have increased it up to come in line with the 10-year average with that. This year, because it's been dry and hot, looks like a very good year for sales. We're estimating near 18.4 billion gallons. And so can show how that number can fluctuate from 16 to 18 billion, depending on the year and how dry it is. That increase has also increased our chemical and energy and residual cost at Fluor Drive. We've done some shifting there. Historically, the last couple of years, we've had Sailorville averaging 7 million gallons per day. We've lowered that down to 6 million gallons per day. As a result, you're seeing a decrease there, but that puts more load on Fluor Drive along with the 100 million gallons there. We are seeing some energy savings at McMullen due to some projects that we've done installing VFDs on our high service pumps and one of our raw water. We've seen some energy savings there, and so we've actually lowered our energy budget at McMullen, which helps save some money there as well. On the capital side, we're up 7%. Fleet reinvestment, our vehicles increased by $15,000. A big portion of that is certainly our plant reinvestments, and again, that is to replace large pumps, motors, or large equipment that has to be replaced either planned or unplanned. So that has gone up 100,000. Many of the CIP projects, Mike will talk a little bit more, that are in the engineering budget. With that, I will turn it over to Jenny.
All right, now I think I got it on the third try. Our operational budget distribution is staying fairly low this year as well, under 0.5%, or change about $19,000. There's three areas I want to let you know about in the operational budget. The first one has to do with water main breaks. So we typically calculate the number of breaks in a budget based on a 5-year average of what we've seen. So if you look at the chart on the right, the blue line is the budgeted number of main breaks, and the red is the actual number of main breaks we've seen. So going forward here in 2021, our 5-year average is now below 300 breaks. So this current year, 2020, we budgeted 322 breaks. Going forward next year, we're gonna go down to 282, a difference of about 40 main breaks for the year, and that reduces the budget by about $188,000. So quite a savings there. In its place, then, we're going to add two things that are going to spend some of that difference of $188,000. The first one is a lead service line project. So some of you may remember back last winter, we had a planning committee meeting where we talked about the EPA's revised lead and copper rule changes that are coming out. And part of that has to do with planning how you're going to get rid of lead service lines in your community. And part of that has to do with water quality monitoring in the schools, to make sure there's no lead in the water at the schools. So those two pieces are gonna roll into this project. The project is not gonna be construction related. It's not gonna actually replace lead service lines, but it's gonna be coming up with a plan. So most of that project dollars are labor related in this case. And then thirdly, we're looking at adding another equipment operator to our staff. On the capital budget side, we're going to be up approximately $174,000, so quite a bit more on that end. Our goal is to increase the number of hydrants and valves that we're replacing to keep our system kind of up to date and current and not falling behind. So our goal is to do a little bit more on the replacement side next year. And then lastly, we're looking at purchasing some large equipment items for our staff. Basically, all three of these are safety related. The large guillotine saw and the travel cutter are saws you can physically attach to the pipe that will then cut into the pipe versus having our staff have to hold a saw that could kick back on them. So those are some safety related items that we want to get more of. And then lastly, the shoring equipment. We always want to make sure we have enough good quality shoring equipment for our staff that need to go in an excavation. So that is what's up in distribution. I will hand it off to Mike in engineering.
Thanks, Jenny. Much like you've heard earlier in the year when we talk about CIP, you know, the big influencers for us are the 2040 long-range plan that was completed in 2017. And we always leave a little room for newly identified needs. You know, all that planning and kind of thinking broadly at certain times of the year is augmented with immediate things that may come up in distribution or production. We'll talk about the operational budget first. In some ways, very stable with two very significant exceptions here. And I want to hit on those at the bottom. When that long-range plan was completed in 2017, it pointed the needle toward making our next plant expansion at the Sailorville plant. There was also an alternative in there to potentially expand treatment capacity at McMullen. And so there's two numbers parked out there. Right now, the number for expanding at Sailorville, at least within the document, is a lower number than the McMullen expansion. So one of the things that we would like to do in 2021 is take a deeper dive on that and come up with firmer, more accurate numbers that will help inform our decision making there. It will not be completely financially driven. There could be other variables in there, but we need to tighten those numbers up. On the flip side there, a groundwater study. You've heard us talk about studying the Des Moines River alluvial. We have a project currently on the books where we are investigating that alluvial area with the intention initially of trying to maybe install a 3 to 5 million gallon per day radio collector well further south. What this study is aimed at doing is to think broader, think bigger. Again, this is going to be driven by the recent water quality challenges that Des Moines Waterworks has seen on the Des Moines River and the potential necessity to really garner some a larger quantity of alluvial groundwater. So what this study, this is the first big step in driving us toward a point where we could finish the hydrogeological work further north and identify the actual well locations for a well field that would produce in excess of 20 million gallons a day for the benefit, at least initially, of the Fluor plant. Constructing all that is going to be a monumental effort financially, probably north of 20 million, something that we would likely need to bond. We can't talk seriously about bonding until we get this type of work completed. So that groundwater study is all part of that effort. So those are the key items in the operating budget, those two studies. Michelle will do capital next. Some of the traditional stuff here, reinvesting at Sailorville, Fluor, McMullen, a lot of programmed efforts here, rechaining, well rehabilitations, RO and UF membranes. I highlighted the water main replacement just to dovetail on some of Jenny's data. Main break data indicates some good positive things that will only continue if we continue to reinvest in the system. And you can see the totals there for Des Moines and Polk County. The last thing I'll mention on the capital side is a tool that we use a lot on the operational side, or need to, is our hydraulic modeling. We would view the product that we have presently as we want more out of it. We want it to be more user-friendly. We feel like there's a product out there that would better suit our needs. Less than $100,000 here for some software. We will likely try and run down a path where we acquire this more user-friendly hydraulic modeling software in 2021. I think that's enough from engineering. Amy?
All right, that wraps up the COO side of the house. And now we'll turn to the CFO side of the house. And I'll start us off. Finance, I don't have very many numbers on this slide, even though we are in the numbers department. The increase in the finance budget for 2021 is $190,000 or 5.5%. And that is entirely due to our corporate insurance program as budgeted. You will recall, though, last month's board meeting 2 weeks ago, the corporate insurance package for 2021 was on the agenda and the board approved it. The positive news here is we did end up being $35,000 under budget, so we have a little bit of room there. Other than that, I wanted to focus on just a few quick items for 2021. The first one you're going to hear about from several people in my side of the house, as we like to say, and that is the customer information system is going live. And so, you know, finance's piece in that is daily auditing and lots of reports. We have to be able to report out of the system to put revenue into our financial statements. And so obviously we will have some of that at go live, but we do expect to continue to improve and dig deeper into some of the information. The second item on our list as a priority for 2021 is support for regionalization analysis. We do expect that to be ongoing. We've been doing a fair amount of behind the scenes number crunching already, and we would expect that to continue into 2021. Wholesale water rate structure. I think you are all very well up to date on that, but I did want to point out that there is a bit more work to do on that as far as finalizing where we want to go with that, as far as changing the structure in the future and nail that down when we're going to do that exactly. And last is a new item for us, and that is to work with IT to take initial steps towards a new financial software. Just as we wrap up one large software project, we feel we want to launch onto another one. In this case, PeopleSoft Financials has been in place here at the utility since 1999. That is a very long time for a software. We have upgraded it in that time period, but we certainly need to look at a new software. This one will become obsolete over time. We made a conscious decision not to continue upgrading it, that we would want to move away from it at some point. And it's not dead yet, but we also don't want to wake up one day and find out that it is unusable. So we will begin our steps forward in that. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Amy.
All right. The big story in customer service in 2021, as Peggy alluded to, will be the CIS and related projects, including mobile field, which is electronic service orders, is what we mean by that. So cue the balloons and the confetti because we are going live on November 30th, which is just a short couple weeks away. Our utility goal, by the way, was to go live by November 30th. So we are literally just squeaking through, but we will meet that goal. Although we will be going live on November 30th, 2021 is going to be a year of great change. You don't just implement a system as extraordinary as this, and I mean extraordinary in terms of multi-year, multi-systems that are interfacing in, multifunctional areas of the utility. You don't just, you know, implement that and then walk away and everything's great. It takes a lot of handholding initially. There will be some shaky times after we implement. I can promise everyone that, but we will get through it. And so 2021, and especially the first quarter or so, will be that stabilization period for that system. We'll also make sure that we continue user training. There will be things that come up that users will, you know, communicate that they feel a little weakened, they aren't sure how it works. And so we'll continue to focus on that, as well as customer communication. We've already started our customer communication, of course, but we are not communicating every single new feature and functionality that this system has. We want to walk before we run. And so we're holding some of the more advanced features back to market those to make sure that that core product until it stabilizes. So we'll continue to communicate to customers, you know, some of the great enhancement features like pay by text, consolidated billing, you know, some of those types of things. It'll take several iterations of marketing cycles before customers hang on to those. And then also it's an opportunity for process reengineering. We have faced a lot of that in this project, and there will be more, because there will be, frankly, things that we haven't thought of as it intersects with real life. And so we'll continue to adjust to all of that. So even though we're going live in 2020, 2021 will still be, I believe, very largely focused on the new systems. So if we look then at customer service just from a normal year approach, our operational budget is up about 5% from last year. Most of that is labor related, a few more hours here and there as we get used to the new system. But we've also budgeted for an increase in bad debt expense. And some of that is related to, frankly, our expectation, kind of a hangover of this year. We have budgeted, I think, for about $50,000 increase in bad debts, which we think is more realistic than where we have been based on the past and based on 2020. We write off accounts when they are about a year old. And so if you remember when the pandemic started, some of those debts will be hitting a year old in 2021. From the capital side, we are up also about a little under 5%. From a level of effort perspective, we're asking status quo budget funds. The reason it's up 5% is really just because of the components. The price of those increase every year. As a reminder, our capital budget is split really into two capital components, one for meters, which we call the cash registers. So we never want those to stop, because if they stop or they slow down, you know, we're missing revenue for the utility. So we always want to keep our meters healthy. And additionally, the other half really of the capital budget goes to our meter reading devices. Those fail. We've had this system in since 1999, about the same year that Peggy's financial system went in. And the age of the meter reading devices lasts about 13 years. We did what I would call an iterative approach to that when we implemented it. So in 1999, we did, you know, 7,000. In 2000, we did several thousand we installed. And so each year they're aging out. And our job now is to keep up with them as they're aging out 13 to 15 years later. In March of 2020, just to give you some context, 7% of our bills were estimated bills, which is very high. But we have been able to reduce that to 2.2% by July of this year. Our goal is less than 1%. So it's really important that we keep these capital components, a healthy stock of them, so that we can make sure that we are able to get reads, to get revenue, so that we can do the work that's before us. So I think that's pretty much the summary of customer service.
All right. In IT, we're expecting an exciting year in 2021, although only at a slightly higher spending level. So our operational budget is up just over 5%. This is due to a couple factors, one being cybersecurity, and then the second being increases in software licensing and maintenance costs. We continue to emphasize information security and cybersecurity with several initiatives that we have going on in 2021. Primarily, we'll be continuing the development of our information security management system. In addition, we'll continue to contract with a local firm that specializes in cybersecurity. They kind of help us guide through and keep up with all the ever-changing things that happen in cybersecurity and in the security landscape. So, I mean, cybersecurity is pretty much a continuous journey, and we'll likely have modest expenditures every year related to improving our security posture. The second increase really falls under the software licensing and maintenance and support costs. These have increased across all the different maintenance contracts and licensing schemes we have across utility. But some of the bigger ones have been in the CIS billing system. You know, as we brought more pieces onto that, that's increased and will continue to increase. The Aclara meter reading system, we had kind of mentioned last year that we're moving to this Aclara One, and it's got kind of a stepped up subscription cost to it. So that's going up each year. And then also our various Cisco systems, anywhere from our phone system to our firewalls and those type of things. There's continual cost increases on all of those. And lastly, in that category, I mean, we've had kind of an increase in our cellular data usage. So our phone bills, essentially, as we use data more and more in our company vehicles, while more work is done in the field. So that's pretty much what's happening on the operational side. On the capital side, we were allocated $280,000 for next year, which is about $45,000 less than this year. Highlights include, again, we have several cybersecurity projects that will be capital related. I won't go into much detail about what those are in public meetings, but as I mentioned just a little bit ago, I mean, cybersecurity is something that's on our mind every day. So there will be several things happening related to that next year. We'll also be doing our normal hardware refresh cycle, which means we'll be replacing approximately 50 PCs or desktops and about 30 laptops. We'll also replace about 20 mobile devices. These are either iPads or Android devices. And lastly, as Peggy kind of mentioned, probably the most exciting project we'll have next year. I know we're looking forward to moving on to a different challenge, and that will be replacing the PeopleSoft financial system that has been around for a long time, but it's been a great system. But we're looking forward to kind of taking the first steps to replacing that. So next year, at the beginning of the year, we'll kind of go through a RFI, RFP process, similar to what we did several years ago with the CIS or CRM replacement. And we'll hope to, you know, get some pretty firm budget numbers so we can hope to include those into 2022's budget discussion and maybe implement that system in 2022. So that's all I have. Next.
All right, from an HR perspective, we have no budget increase actually for next year. But we do have some initiatives that are that I want to cover at this point. And so we have, first off, if you recall, our collective bargaining agreement with AFSCME will be expiring at the end of 2021. So we've had a more or less a 6-year agreement with them. So we'll launch into negotiations next year. We hope to have a multi-year agreement in place as a result of those negotiations. And hopefully, again, maybe 3 to 5 year agreement with them. Beyond that, we've talked in the past about some of the retirements that are coming up. And as we look to the future, we know we have several other employees that will retire in the next few years. And so we'll be continuing with our employee training and development plans to help prepare our employees for future openings that we'll have here at the utility. And then kind of along those same lines, as we think about bringing new employees into the organization, we've over the years kind of skinnied down our onboarding process, and it's Ted and I have had some discussions about actually enhancing that again to a point where we would maybe do some additional like tours and things like that, that would make it a more meaningful process for new employees so they connect more with the organization, you know, feel more a part of Duane Waterworks as a new employee coming in. And so we'll be relaunching that in 2021. We'll also continue our emphasis on diversity initiatives and looking at creating a diversity and inclusion plan. This is something that we had actually a senior management team had a discussion with Sanjita Pradhan from the Greater Des Moines Partnership. And so we're kind of looking at developing something along those lines in 2021. And then lastly, kind of as part of our strategic planning process too, we'd like to look at how we enhance our employee culture and make, again, the from the organizational standpoint, our core mission, vision, and values, and helping bring that to life here at Des Moines Waterworks so that every employee understands their role and how they play a bigger part of what we do here at Des Moines Waterworks. And so those are really the kind of initiatives that we'll be focusing on in HR in 2021. And with that, I'll turn it over, I think, to Peggy. I'm sorry, I've got one more slide here. I apologize. These are the positions for next year that are approved. So we do have a slight increase. We have within water distribution, Jenny mentioned already, we've added a position there for next year. And then also within water production, we've added basically a position. And then we've added a half of a position within the CEO's office. And this is a shared position with my office. Actually, we have a now full-time administrative assistant position that we're hiring for. So that'll be a shared position between the CEO's office and HR.
All right, with that, I would, well, first of all, ask what questions you have that we could answer. Thank you, Sue. As a reminder, again, the process is a little confusing, frankly, but at your October board meeting, the board set the date of the November board meeting as a public hearing. That's a technicality that we have to adhere to by state law. So we will hold a brief public hearing, and then the board will approve the budget. So that's the final process. And then after that, we almost start over again on the 2022 budget in not much time.
Joel, that was your first time through that process. And there's a lot of information there. But as you look through those, if there's, you know, your new eyes in this process, so if there's something you think needs to be added or done differently, raise your hand at some point.
I will. Nothing at this moment. It was thorough and very comprehensible for even for a simpleton like me. So I appreciate that.
Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
No, that's what we do for you. Anybody else have a comment or a question on this? Sue, Diane?
Not on this. But Graham, I do have a finance and regionalization comment that I wanted to share with all of us because it does tie to the financial piece. So whenever the time is right on that.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else on this, Ted, do you want to turn it over to Sue first, or do you want to give us your CEO comments?
Let's let Sue comment. Maybe she'll help me out here already.
It's just quick, but we have committed that we're going to keep the board informed of, you know, the regionalization meetings. And I thought we had an excellent meeting this past, was that last Friday? I don't know what day it is. Ted, was that Friday?
I think it was Thursday.
Thursday. Okay. But I just wanted this board to know that there was one point in the presentation, and we're sharing a lot of information right now, but there was one point in the information that I was so impressed with our staff and the amount of detail. Peggy alluded to it on the slide when she said, you know, we've been crunching a lot of numbers. Amy Kaler gave an expense allocation overview to West Des Moines and Urbandale that I'm not kidding. I just thought, and I sent her a note. I said, boom, you know, there it is. It was so impressive. And she even used the term, she said, you know, we're going to show you behind the curtain. And she went into great detail, but it was not that we were guessing at what our costs are. It was, here's how we are allocating our full-time employees, our costs. And I have to say, I just thought West Des Moines in particular was so impressed. And I know that, Ted, you've said before that Amy is, she teaches, and she's, you know, that that's part of the reason that her presentation style is so great. But I really felt like, I have felt like it's been going along very well. And Diane, I'm sure you'll want to add to this, but it was just that moment of the numbers that we have, the cost allocation, expense allocation that we have, and where we come up with our cost of service is real legit. And we heard from West Des Moines, and I don't want to take anything away from West Des Moines. I cannot say enough about how they're also sharing what they have, but they have a very small staff. And so they are asking questions like, how do we track our time? How do we make sure that we have all of our employee costs? And so, Amy, just kudos to you. I was blown away, and I thought the rest of the board needed to know, because the timing couldn't be better for that type of credibility to be there when we're talking about regionalization. So thank you.
You're welcome. And just in response to that, that's exactly the type of analysis when I think you alluded to this, Sue, on Peggy's slide. You know, it's her team that's doing all of that number crunching behind the scenes. Ted and I are just there to present it. And our systems have made this an easier, I won't say easy analysis, but an easier analysis in terms of, you know, our activity-based costing, our project costing. So it really gave us a good springboard, I think, to do that sort of analysis. And Donna Heckman and Peggy, again, deserve the credit. I just was there to present it. So thank you.
Well, thank you. But Graham, thanks for letting me share that at this meeting. I thought it would be more appropriate than at the full board meeting.
Yep. And we have another meeting, what, tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, yes.
Tomorrow morning. So we're all putting in the time, but I also appreciate it because I know that as we've stepped this up, that the weeks have gotten shorter and shorter for everybody to get their homework done in between so that we can have those discussions that we've been having.
Remind me, the group has moved to weekly meetings, or are you still bi-weekly?
It's weekly now, Joel, and, yeah. And in addition, we've scheduled a meeting with the Ahlers Law Firm and Spear Financial to talk about bonding and the implications of regionalization and asset transfer with bonding. So that's a meeting next week in addition to next week's meeting. So at least once a week throughout the month of November to be ready to report out in December.
And it's all that work that our staff and West Des Moines staff is doing in between, that just hours and hours of information, but it's building trust and credibility.
All of your work is much appreciated.
Great. Thanks, Ted.
A couple quick things for me, Graham. First, one thing I want to share relates to regionalization and some of our costs associated with that. The board will recall that early in 2019, we had a proposal from FCS to do what we were calling phase three at that time, basically helping us get ready for issuing our term sheet in September of that year. That was a $37,000 initiative that they billed us those costs in April, May, and June of 2019. And then essentially ever since then, there have been what they're calling supplemental tasks that we've been going back to them and asking them to run additional analysis and look at different depreciation schedules and how that would affect the model. And we've asked them to do a lot of work throughout this process. And I just want to bring to the board for your information that that additional work through the end of October has totaled another $35,700. So there, the initial work was right at 37. Now we're another 35,700. We've asked them to do significant work here in the last month as well. Just want there to be awareness of that and eyes on that so that it isn't a surprise at the end of this process.
And makes me think of our first conversation about professional service contracts.
Speaking of,
but I mean, in tracking, you know, ongoing expenses like that, I think that is important, Ted. So thanks for the update.
I think, and that's a great example, Graham, of what will show up on that list. And so you'll have eyes, which is important.
But the work they do has been invaluable to bringing this thing to closure.
Agreed. I think we couldn't be where we are without their analysis and input. And I think people have gained trust in their analysis, and that's important. So that's just an FYI. The other thing I wanted to touch on was just our COVID-19 response. You know, the last couple of months, we've been kind of status quo, but as things have really started escalating here in the state and even in Polk County over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking more about, and I just want to make you aware of a couple of things that we are doing this week. Again, we are pushing pause on our in-home customer service, so we will not be going into customers' homes unless it's an emergency situation. We are going to send a number of vehicles back home with employees because we were starting to see, you know, 20 to 30 folks in the garage in the morning. It's hard to get in and out of there without some amount of congregation going on. So we're going to send some of those vehicles home. A couple of things that we have not decided to change, at least at this point, we are not going to close the office yet to walk-in customers, and we are not going to suspend service terminations yet. So we do have a number of folks still working from home. That might ramp up a little bit in rotation, but we're trying to be responsive to what's going on around us and trying to protect our folks.
And I've got a question on that.
Sure.
So you've got two control centers, right? I mean, so that you can switch off. Are the staff cleaning those between teams? How does that work?
You know, Graham, we've created a separate control center, as you said. We've also stationed the second operator who's on shift in a different part of the Fluor Drive plant. So in each case, there's just one person in each of those rooms. I see Kyle popped on here, and I'm going to let him comment on the cleaning regime that's happening between shifts.
Yes, operators do have cleaning supplies, so they are supposed to kind of wipe down the desk at the end of their shift and at the beginning of their shift, so it's being cleaned twice per shift. But there's actually four separate rooms that can be operated out of, and so there's only one person in each room. And so full-time operators, a lot of times they're working here at Fluor Drive, but on the weekends and things like that, we have people working at the other control center at Maffitt. Cleaning is being done between shifts as well.
Well, and Kyle, use a nagging board member as a tool if you want to nag them and remind them to do that cleaning. I think we all are getting to a point where we get a little lackadaisical about this stuff these days, and so if you want to use me as a tool that if you're getting beat about the ears to do that cleaning, do so. I think that's very important.
I would agree. And we've been sharing with the staff some of the numbers of Polk County, how it's been climbing. I think we're all getting worn out of hearing of wearing masks, but it's good to show the statistics and to remind staff of that. So I appreciate that.
And is that true? I mean, for, you know, customer service and others, Ted, I mean, there are people that share equipment from time to time, and are they being reminded that they need to be aware and clean and that kind of thing?
They are, Graham. One thing that we've really tried to do is limit the spaces where folks have to share workstations specifically. And in a couple of places, we've even added workstations so that on shifts, people don't, you know, even though they're not there at the same time, they have their individual spot where they can sit. But yes, you know, we've provided cleaning supplies and hand sanitizer and that kind of thing to the folks in the field and encourage them to use it. But I think you're right on, Graham. We're all getting a little lax. This has been going on for so long and people are tired of it, kind of letting our guard down. And I have to believe that's part of what's contributing to the increases that we see. But we're very concerned. We know that employees are going to be infected. And in fact, we have had a handful of employees over the last couple of weeks who tested positive. But our goal is to ensure that when they're here, that they're not passing it to others in their group, so we don't lose the whole group all at one time. And thank goodness to this point, we've been reasonably successful in that endeavor, but we can't let our guard down. We have to use whatever tools, be it a nagging board member or the CDC or whatever, to remind and encourage and keep people vigilant so that we have the staff here we need to continue to provide safe water.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Ted. Thanks to everybody out there, you know, that on staff that continues to soldier forward in these times. It's difficult. And, you know, I think that I just appreciate that you're keeping your eye on the ball here. I mean, what we do is so important for our community that we can't, we're the last people that can become lackadaisical about this.
I agree. And we're fortunate, Graham, in that the senior management team and our union leadership team are all very much on board with being protective and following through with the guidance that we need to follow. That's been very helpful. That we're speaking with one voice and we are of one mind. That makes it as easy as it can be to move this forward.
Excellent. Anything else for the good of the cause today? Diane, Joel, anybody? Ted, thank you.
We will thank you.
Adjourn this meeting. And when do we meet again? We meet, what's the next meeting is?
The next meeting is the 24th. The full board meeting will be our next opportunity to get together. So,
Ted, our meeting tomorrow morning is at West Des Moines.
You know, Diane, I think we agreed we were going to do a full Zoom meeting tomorrow, and John is going to go into the Urbandale office, so he has
that. That's right. Thank you.
I think it's full Zoom, or I'm intending to be right here on a virtual meeting, so that's what I would propose.
Then I'll do that too, and I won't be driving around aimlessly trying to figure out where everybody is.
Trying to find us, yeah.
Yeah.
I have, I'll keep you posted on this. We are thinking about traveling over Thanksgiving. All of our kids are in Southern California and can't travel, and we're thinking of traveling to them. I haven't figured that out yet. But
are you thinking of flying, Graham?
Yes.
Are you? Okay.
We are. But we've considered driving too, and we've got to come to some decisions on that. But you know, Connor in particular isn't allowed to travel restrictions. And his wife, who she's in Newport, Rhode Island, they can't travel back for Thanksgiving. And so it's getting to be a long time without seeing our kids. So we're trying to figure out a way to do it.
Well, good luck with that. And I'll be very interested to hear if you do fly, because I have plans in the first part of the year that I'm wavering on because of the flights.
I know. Southwest has been not filling the center seats. And so I've been thinking about flying my daughter home on Southwest or using that ourselves, but they're going to start selling the middle seats on December 1st. So
yeah,
seems backwards.
It does. So many things the numbers are all going in the wrong direction, but we just charge ahead with back to normal. So
not at Des Moines Waterworks. We're not.
We're going to protect our people.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Thank you, Graham.
Have a good night.
Bye.